Hello and welcome to Conduit Conversations, bringing you pioneers at the cutting edge of social change. I'm Paul Fonsale, co-founder of The Conduit, a home for people passionate about positive impact. What does it take to truly create an equitable healthcare system? From entrepreneurs to investors to community workers from across the globe, this season we're speaking to the people aligning capital and technology to find the answer. This episode is produced in partnership with the Johnson & Johnson Center for Health Worker Innovation as part of a series investigating the trends, challenges, and opportunities in the global healthcare sector. My guest today is Temi Giwa-Thubosun, founder and CEO of LifeBank. Temi has over 10 years of health management experience with the Department for International Development, the World Health Organization, UNDP, and the Lagos state government. In 2016, she launched LifeBank, Africa's healthcare supply chain engine, with a mission to save 1 million lives across Africa in 10 years. LifeBank combines tech, data, and smart logistics to help hospitals find life-saving medical supplies such as blood, oxygen, and vaccines, and delivers them in the right condition and on time. In 2014, the BBC listed Temi as one of the 100 women changing the world. She was also recognized as an African innovator by Quartz and the World Economic Forum. Temi, it's a great pleasure to speak to you today.
Thank you for having me. I'm very glad to be here.
So tell us about LifeBank. It was originally founded as a response to maternal mortality in Nigeria. What first drew your attention to this serious issue, and how did that inspire you to start LifeBank?
That's a lovely question. So I'd always cared about maternal healthcare as a profession. My job was, I was interested in the management side of healthcare because I felt called to solve this maternal healthcare problem. So it was, in the beginning, an intellectual endeavor. I wanted to do it as a profession, and I had no personal connection to the problem. Through my travels as a teenager and a young adult, I'd seen how awful the health systems across Africa was, and the impact on people's lives. And I wanted to do the work of ensuring that we had the right health systems across Africa, and basically transforming healthcare so that we can, ensure impacts on people's lives. So in the beginning, it was entirely intellectual passion. And until I had my boy 6 years ago, 6 and a half now. That was when it became a little bit more personal. Towards the end of the pregnancy, I got very, very ill. I was on bed rest for a couple of weeks. It was very difficult. I had to have an emergency, after being in labor for a couple of days, actually. I had to go into emergency surgery. So it was just this process of delivering him that made it a little bit personal. I started researching everything that I could find while on bed rest, trying to search everything that I could find on maternal health, and basically found out that the number one cause of maternal death in Africa is something called postpartum hemorrhage, where a mom gives birth and starts bleeding, and within 20 minutes and 2 hours, she's dead. So I felt connected to that problem, and I felt like I could try to solve it because it also has a very simple solution. Data out there shows that, you can save 8 out of 10 women who will die from postpartum hemorrhage by just making sure that there's enough blood in the hospital when she's delivering. So I felt like I could build a system to deliver blood to the hospitals to try to save moms.
So then tell us how that, led to LifeBank. Tell us how LifeBank actually works and articulate for us the problem that you help to solve.
Right. So if you can save 8 out of 10 women who are going to die from postpartum hemorrhage, basically bleeding to death, by just ensuring that blood is available, then the problem is actually quite simple. It is a distribution problem. It wasn't that there was no blood. I learned through my research that many hospitals in developing countries often have to discard blood because it is a short shelf life product. It lasts only about 6 weeks and then it has to be discarded. So it wasn't a supply problem because there was access to supply. And we had a market where, you know, the supply side was struggling because of excess and discarding, and the demand side was struggling because people were dying. So I felt like I could build a system that better connects the supply to the demand and serve everybody. And that's what we did. We built a platform, a marketplace, basically, to help hospitals discover blood banks who have the supply that they were looking for that could save their patients' lives. And then we built a distribution system to connect those suppliers to the hospitals in real time. And that means, you know, motorcycles in urban areas. It means trucks in a little bit to the last mile. It means looking at air distribution. It means looking at water distribution. So it was basically this idea of getting supplies to hospitals, supplies that are available already, to hospitals that need those supplies in real time, on demand, in the right condition and on time, and then doing it at a price point that is affordable for the African people.
That sounds pretty complicated, and I'm amazed that you'd in fact describe it as simple. But I'm sure that the execution of it is really involves an enormous amount of expertise. Tell us a little bit about how technology enables you to fulfill a Life Bank's mission.
At this moment, I'm sure that we have 6 trucks moving oxygen to some places in Nigeria. We have motorcycles in at least 7 urban areas delivering at the moment. We have boat delivery. We have tricycles delivering in peri-urban areas. So to actually control all this delivery, to control and maintain temperature during the delivery, to move oxygen, to move blood, to move blood products, to move medical samples, and to deliver real time, constantly, round the clock. One of the things that I like to say about Life Bank is that we've been alive for 4.5 years and we've never shut down. Like, not shut down as in, you know, the business shuts down, but we've never literally gone home. We've never shut down the office, close the door and go home and to start again the next day. We have, you know, run a 24-hour service since we launched. So it's quite a difficult operation to control all these delivery methods in real time, constantly maintain temperature. So we really have to use technology. So the way we describe Life Bank is we are a tech and a logistics business. We are using high tech and low tech to really make sure that we're optimizing this delivery network. We use, you know, data science, we use blockchain, we use things as simple as USSD and SMS technology. So we always, we're curious tinkerers. We're consistently tinkering and building tech that are very, very, you know, strong and robust and flexible that will help us deliver our services across a country that is so large and deliver these services round the clock and in real time.
So how do you analyze and gather data? I should imagine trying to figure out where blood will be needed, when and in what quantity and by whom, and where there is excess blood or reservoirs of blood that can be quickly transferred, and how to do that in an efficient way with a complex supply chain is not a trivial exercise. How do you do your kind of predictive modeling? Tell us a little bit about the role that data plays in Life Bank.
Data is critical. The way we think about our distribution system is we call it the 4D model. The first of those Ds is data, gathering inventory information. I think that's where we start. We first have to gather what's available. So that was a strategic decision by Life Bank to say, we wouldn't start with demand, we'll start with supply. So first we gather inventory information from suppliers across multiple product type. Of course, we started with delivering blood, but we've since extended that to oxygen, to medical samples, to PPEs, to COVID-19 tests. So we've really extended our supply chain network. So for us, the first thing is supply, figuring out the supply. And then we work with hospitals real time to gather demand requests. And then we use our technology to match that supply that we've already gathered to the demand from hospitals. Of course, the next step of what we're doing is now actually predicting the demand. So in the beginning and until very recently, we only focused on real-time demand. We were not doing any prediction. But now we're building our capacity to predict the demand at a national level, but also down to each institution, helping and working with the leadership of those institutions to help better predict their demand for these critical supplies.
So I've heard that you partnered with Google Nigeria to incorporate Google Maps into LifeBank's app. What have been the benefits of that partnership, and are there other technology organizations you'd be interested in partnering with in order to further your mission?
So we partnered with Google because we had one problem, and it was if you have to deliver critical supplies in under 40 minutes, you need to have the right partnership. Lagos is one of the most highly populated cities in Africa. It is notorious for its traffic gridlock. For an example, my commute to work is often about 4 hours per day. And on a day, like on a Sunday where there's no gridlock, the commute is about a 30-minute commute. But on a day where people are out and about, it moves from 30 minutes to about a 3.5-4 hour commute. So Lagos is very notorious for its traffic and for its gridlock. So if you need to deliver this critical supply, and if the clock is ticking for our patients, like I mentioned earlier, women generally have between 20 minutes and 2 hours once they have postpartum hemorrhage. So if you need to deliver these critical supplies in a state where it's notorious for its gridlock, and you need to do it in under, and the clock is ticking, and you need to do it in between 20 minutes and 2 hours, you need to make sure that you have insight on what's happening on the road, even before you start, even before the order comes in. You have to have insight of what's happening on the road, what's happening, what are the hotspots for gridlock, how do you bypass this gridlock, how do you map your route so that you're getting to the hospital as fast as possible. So to do that, we couldn't build that capacity ourselves, and Google already had that capacity. Google Maps is a wildly used application in Nigeria. So we then decided to deploy this application to help us better map our routes for delivery so that we can get to the hospital faster and make sure that we can deliver impact to the patients who are relying on us. So in the beginning, when LifeBank launched, we were delivering on average in about 3 hours, which was not acceptable. So the first year, we were averaging about 3 hours per delivery. By the second year, we were averaging around an hour and 30 minutes. And then with a partnership with Google, we were able to drive at delivery time down to about 55 minutes. And then we deploy a hub and a spoke model, and that drove down our average delivery time to about 42 minutes. So now we're at 42 minutes. With all these partnerships, we're able to deliver at an optimum time. Of course, our goal is to get to 30 minutes. So we're looking to build all the technology, particularly deploying drones technology, UAV technology, to ensure that we can reach hospitals even faster, particularly for certain patients who don't have 40 minutes, patients who have 25 minutes or 20 minutes. Our goal is to be able to reach them using UAV technology.
I should imagine this is challenging work when you don't have a global pandemic like COVID-19. Tell us a little bit how the pandemic has affected your work, both negatively, but also in allowing you to use your remarkable infrastructure to perhaps try and provide assistance to those who might be vulnerable.
I think as a hobby, I like to track things in public health. Before LifeBank, I did quite a lot of work on Nigeria's Ebola response. I'm sort of like a tracker of this kind of global pandemic. I was very much aware of the pandemic much earlier, so I've been tracking it for a while. And the question I always ask myself is, if it comes to the markets where we operate, what would I do? how would I be of use, and how would we use LiveBank's vast experience with distribution, particularly at the last mile, to help the country respond to this critical emergency. And then when COVID hit, you know, the first thing we thought was we needed to test. And I think it was the global consensus that testing was really critical. The first thing we asked ourselves is, how do we use our skills, our distribution organizing skills, to help the country respond to COVID by testing and testing more widely? The first thing we did was we were the first people to build a mass testing center here in Lagos. It was a drive-through and a walk-through mass testing center. And we were the first to build it in Lagos. We partnered with critical public health institutions here in Nigeria and private sector partners as well to ensure that we can reach the vast majority of people with COVID-19 tests. So we recently launched our third testing center. You know, we launched three testing centers in two states in Nigeria. Yesterday, we hit our 15,000 patient tested for COVID-19, and it's been incredibly rewarding work. Of course, testing is one thing. Also, ensuring access to oxygen became also critical. And with LiveBank's infrastructure, with LiveBank's supply chain, last mile distribution chops, we knew we can be of help in distributing medical oxygen to the last mile. So we extended, you know, in the beginning, before COVID-19, our oxygen distribution business was just on demand, a couple of bikes in Lagos delivering for emergencies for oxygen. But with COVID-19, we knew we needed to reach the very last mile. So we invested and partnered to deliver medical oxygen on demand and to the last mile. As we speak, we are in our sixth state in Nigeria, delivering cylinders of oxygen to the isolation centers and to the infection diseases hospital where COVID-19 patients are being tested.
I want to ask you a question about more sort of radical or disruptive or exciting forms of technology, because I'm interested in whether you see new forms of tech emerging that will lead to significant changes in what you do, that will enhance and make your work more efficient. Are there new forms of technology emerging specifically in your space that you think could be transformative, that you think are particularly exciting and worth paying attention to?
Absolutely. I think there are two that I'm very excited about, particularly a new use case that we are, the way we're using this technology to do something completely different. I think I'm particularly excited about it. I think the first one is blockchain technology. Traditionally, blockchain is used in fintech, in financial technology. It isn't obvious. Its use cases in healthcare or in medical distribution. And the way we're using it, I'm especially excited about it to see how this is going to work in the market. For example, in Nigeria, research shows that between 4-12% of HIV cases come from the blood system. As one of the largest blood distribution business in Africa, we know that we have a special opportunity to bring accountability, traceability, transparency into the blood system. And in the beginning, we were trying to use traditional technology to build this system. But one of the things that we were always concerned about is ensuring traceability and ensuring that the technology we're building and the database we use is highly immutable, meaning that it cannot be easily edited. So we then adopted blockchain to be our database. So with the blockchain technology that we're building, we're looking to partner with major institutions like IBM, like AWS. We're building blockchain infrastructure to ensure that we have access to this technology and to help use this technology in this use case in a way to deliver impact and to ensure safe blood in developing countries. The other technology that I'm especially excited about is UAVs. Drones, of course, are getting more popular in the world, so they're definitely not new. But using drones to deliver in critical emergencies has been interesting for us. We've been exploring the use. We did a project in Ethiopia last year, and we're looking to do even more projects across Africa to use drones to deliver in emergencies. Of course, there's a lot of work that needs to be done to make sure that to optimize drones for this market, we need to do more research on battery technology. We need to make sure that we have the right pilots. But we're really incredibly excited about the potential for UAVs to help us build a newer way to deliver critical supplies and a newer way to do distribution across Africa.
A lot of your work must involve collaborating with the governments and with state institutions involved in the delivery of healthcare. Tell us a little bit about the public-private partnerships that you help foster and to bring into being, and what are both the benefits and the challenges of these kinds of partnerships?
Earlier, I mentioned a technology that we're building with blockchain to bring transparency into the blood system. The product is called SmartBag. When we had this idea, we were really excited. We started building, we started structuring, etc. And then we went to the market and started talking to public health institutions. And one of the first feedback we got was, where is the data? Where is the science? We're not just going to trust you guys. We need to see the data. We need to see the science. So immediately we started looking at who could we partner with who's doing critical work in science, in innovation, in healthcare across Africa, and which public institution and private institution could we partner with. Immediately, we were able to reach the Johnson & Johnson team, the African Innovation Challenge of the Johnson & Johnson team. We applied, we were selected, and we built a clinical trial team in partnership with an institution here in Nigeria called the Nigerian Institute of Medical Research to run a clinical trial on the SmartBag product to find out if it is actually bringing accountability and transparency into the blood system and if it delivers impact in the way that we think it will. So with this partnership with Johnson & Johnson providing critical guidance, mentoring and funding to help us deliver this clinical trial, in part, which the clinical trial is being done by the Nigerian Institute of Medical Research. With these three institutions coming together, Johnson & Johnson, LifeBank, NIMR, three of us coming together to actually investigate whether SmartBag, this blockchain technology, can actually bring transparency into the blood system in developing countries is incredibly rewarding. Everybody brings different things to the table. We are, executors, we are distributors. We know how to operate. The Medical Research Institute, the Nigerian Medical Research Institute is, major institution in doing medical research. It's actually the only institution in Nigeria solely designed to do medical research. And then with Johnson & Johnson's long history with medical research, we're building medical products, etc. We're able to actually build something of value and actually deliver this research that would help drive impact in this particular use case across Africa.
So if you had the ability to change one or just a cluster of things in the world of healthcare in order to make it more effective, more accessible, more equitable, what would you do at a sort of design level, particularly because you encounter the healthcare system with both its promise and its pitfalls with such regularity? I'd love to hear your view on that.
I'll give you two answers. The first one will, of course, be the obvious one, and the second one will be a little bit non-obvious. The obvious one is, of course, LifeBank. I believe that if all hospitals across Africa have the right resources, if they have the right supply, if they have all the things they need to deliver care, I believe our health system will be more resilient, will be more robust, and will be better able to respond to critical medical emergencies like COVID-19. I believe and I know that COVID-19 will not be the last global pandemic. We're entering the pandemic age where the continent is highly structured together. There are multiple other candidates for a pandemic. So this battle is not over. So it's really critical to build resilient and focused and smart health system that are flexible to respond to critical medical emergency that we continue to have. And for me, making sure a critical part of that is making sure that we have the right supply chain. Supply chain is so important for healthcare. No matter how beautiful a hospital is, no matter how trained the doctors and nurses are, no matter how much resources is available, if no one is able to move all these medical supplies, blood, oxygen, gloves, you know, gauze, you know, testing kits, etc., from the port to the facilities in the right condition, quickly, on time, there will never be a chance of delivering the right healthcare in this hospital. So absolutely, having a life bank across developing countries, across emerging markets, that's delivering critical supplies round the clock, that can be depended on to be that silent infrastructure for healthcare, is absolutely critical. So I didn't want to sound biased at all, but I believe deeply that when life bank at scale is absolutely important in building health system, in building resiliency into our health systems. That's the first. I think the second thing is, of course, payments. I think most countries around the world are grappling and trying to have this conversation around how to pay for healthcare and how to make sure that we can deliver healthcare universally, and then ensure that payments is structured in a way that is fair and that is accessible to everybody across their country. So this is not an African problem. This is not a developing country problem. I think it's a global problem generally. And there are different models that I think are working in some places, but I think getting payments, getting universal healthcare structured across markets will be really critical, one, in building health systems, in solving old problems, in solving entrenched problems, but also in solving new problems and dealing with new diseases.
I'm sure there are many days in which your work is incredibly inspiring and uplifting, and you sit back and say, that's what makes it all worth it. But there must be days where you're exhausted and challenged and overwhelmed by the systemic problems that you encounter. Mm. What inspires you and challenges you to keep going?
Nigeria is an incredibly difficult place to do business. There's a lot of issues that we need to deal with as entrepreneurs. We have to ensure that we have access to energy, we have access to water, access to security, and all of this has to be done by each business. So it's an absolutely difficult environment to do business. So often I have to ask myself why, you know. I have to constantly go back to the why. When I feel discouraged, when I feel unhappy, when I feel doubt, I have to revert to the why. And for me, the why are the stories of the impact stories that we have at Life Bank. I have to go and remind myself who we're doing the work for. And for me, that is why we've been able to weather all the storms. We'll be able to keep going for this long, and we'll continue to build and continue to grow and continue to build at scale. And the why is really the women we are saving, the women we save from postpartum hemorrhage, the child who we deliver medical oxygen to and does not have to gasp to death, the family whose, you know, child we're able to get a COVID-19 test to on time. Recently, there was a young man in a city called Kano. He had been in the hospital for a couple of days. He needed a specific drug that is sort of like a heavy-duty antibiotics. He couldn't get access to it. We're able to find the drug in the medicine in Lagos and distribute it all the way to him directly in the hospital where he was, in Kano, in the city where he lived, and it saved his life. So for me, it is those stories that keep me going when things get really hard.
For somebody who sees you as an inspirational figure and would like to emulate what you do, what advice would you give them? How would they get started? How do you make positive impact in the world of healthcare?
I think what really matters is you have to find the why. And I think this is very connected to the question you asked earlier, which is, you know, how do I face, you know, how do I deal with difficulties? It's going to be difficult. No matter what problem you want to solve, no matter where you want to solve it, it's going to be hard. There will be moments of doubt. There will be moments where you very much are wondering why There were moments where other people are asking you, why do you keep doing this? You know, why are you doing this to yourself? So you have to know the why, and you have to be deeply committed to the why. You have to basically visualize. For me, what works is I visualize the person. I literally have to go, I have a box of stories that I try to find a picture and the story of someone. And I have to consistently remind myself of the reason why I do it, and which is to deliver impact to people. It's not about, you know, often when you're the leader of a company, you do much less in terms of actually reaching the patient. So it is, you know, a lot of the work you're going to be doing is building an institution, hiring the right team, speaking to investors, speaking to business, managing governance. So a lot of the things you're going to be doing would not be frontline, which often may, you know, move you away from the why. So you have to be very, very aware of why you're doing what you're doing. You have to connect yourself to the story, the narrative of the impact you're having. And that's what's going to keep you going when things get tough. So when you hit that valley of the idea, valley of the business, what's going to get you going so that you can get to that top will be knowing and connecting with the reason for why you started it. So before you start, I think you should actually pay attention to the why. And once you find the why, once you find the reason that will inspire you, that will continue to inspire you to do your best work, then just start.
So Tammy, I'm going to ask a final question, which is, tell us one of those stories. Go into that box and give us a why story that will leave us with a sense of why you truly do the work you do.
I think that there's so many stories. Before this goes live, we would have hit 10,000 patients. So for us, we're constantly counting the number of patients we have saved. And in the next couple of days, we're going to hit the 10,000 patients. So I'm incredibly happy and elated by the sheer number of people we've saved. And I'm really excited to hit the 1 million lives very, very soon. Now, there's so many stories. Like I mentioned, I could tell you 10,000 stories. And to select one is actually quite difficult, but I will try. A couple of, and this is not a story of someone we save. This is a story of someone we could not save, but it's an example of the work we must do. We must continue to do, and we must continue to invest. Her name is Rosemary. I won't give the full name, but our first name is Rosemary. She was a doctor in a government hospital in Nigeria somewhere. And she was actually not just a doctor. She was a consultant physician. And she had an asthma attack, and she died in the hospital where she worked. She held on for a couple of hours, basically unable to breathe well. They looked around for oxygen, up and down, trying to find the right oxygen. They couldn't find the oxygen for her. A couple of hours later, they found oxygen, actually, but they couldn't find the spanner to open the oxygen cylinder. So the oxygen was in the hospital, but they couldn't figure out how to open the cylinder fast enough to save her life. For me, this is a woman who is as committed to this work as I am. She, many, many, many doctors, particularly in that part of the world, are consistently trying to get out of Nigeria to go and do work globally. It's a valid choice, but this woman did not choose that. She did not choose to make a ton of money by leaving Nigeria to go practice elsewhere. She was committed to our health system. She was committed to this work, and she died because of the inefficiencies built into our distribution system. I think about her almost every day. She is the example and the inspiration for why we started doing medical oxygen more significantly. And she is an example of the level of impact that I must deliver so that I can be of use in this health system. She's both an example and the why for why I feel duty bound to build this distribution platform that would ensure that medical oxygen and blood and gloves and test kits, whatever is needed, is distributed to the very last mile. Because she was committed and she deserved better. And unfortunately, we were not able to deliver better for her. And for me, my goal in the next couple of years is continue to build the distribution infrastructure that would have ensured that she did not die.
Tammy, I'm sure that you have 10,000 more of those stories to tell, but that one was moving enough and testament enough to your extraordinary work. So for that, we thank you, and thank you for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you for listening to Conduit Conversations. Feel free to subscribe. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. To learn more about the Johnson & Johnson Center for Health Worker Innovation, please visit chwy.jnj.com. Once more, chwy.jnj.com. And for more information on The Conduit and our community of change makers, please visit theconduit.com.